Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is the Sound of Succession podcast with Jamie East and Chris Mandel. It's part of the Dragon Cast series where we talk about the best TV shows in the world. HBO, please don't sue us.
You know what to do, like and subscribe. Ah, fuck off.
Well, 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 if it isn't you lot, welcome to the Sound of Succession. I'm Jamie East.
And I am Chris Mandel.
And we jump from the earliest recording we've ever done to the latest recording we've ever
yes.
done. It is like just coming up to 6 p.m. UK time, Greenwich Mean Time, which means the editing scissors will probably not get used very much at all, because I want to get this up kind of like soon. But We've been counting votes,
haven't we? That's what
we've been busy counting votes. I've been planning my concession speech.
I've been starting fires.
Just
for the sake of it. Yeah,
I've been drinking things that really should never be drunk.
So
I think we've got the same question. We've all got the same question, and I'm sure the listeners have got the question. We're going to ask the listeners. Go on then. What's the question?
What was Greg drinking?
I think it's got to be urine. And mm-hmm. because they're Scandinavian and Nordic, I'm going for reindeer piss. As some kind of like frat bro initiation, slightly taking the piss out of Gregory. I don't know. What do you think? I mean,
something like hazing.
Yeah, a little bit. It's something like that, isn't it?
I kind of thought, after everything with Ebba, that they might have made him drink a drop of blood or something.
Ooh.
Because I just imagined they were at some scuzzy bar in, like, Manhattan.
Yeah.
And I just imagined he comes back with a little vodka tonic, and they're, like, a little vial of Lucas's blood, and they're like,
thawed.
You know, how much do you want to join this company kind of thing? Amazing. Because there's something about, the piss is a good guess, because it's quite depraved. But the blood is really something that you shouldn't drink. And I don't even know, you know, there are some kinky folk out there, and hello if you're listening, that enjoy drinking each other's piss. I don't know anyone that drinks someone else's blood.
Angelina Jolie and Billy Bob Thornton.
That's right. She did have a necklace, didn't she? Mm. So I thought that my other guess was maybe sweat, but it would be quite hard to procure.
You'd have to wear one of those suits that boxers wear when they're running, and kind of like a water butt tap.
Yeah.
At the bottom of the leg, I think.
Oh. But
again,
turn on the tap. But if anyone had a little flask of his own sweat, it would probably be Lucas.
Yeah, it does. There is something of the American Psycho about him, isn't there?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a really weird episode, and I think
it felt odd. Yeah,
I'm glad we've had all day to think about it, because I genuinely have been thinking about it all day.
Yeah.
I don't think it was really one of my favourites. I think it's probably my least favourite of the season.
I think my initial take on it is it's a very difficult episode to get into if you aren't an American voter.
I agree. Our voting system is also complicated, fucked up, and exhausting to follow, but theirs is something else.
Electoral votes and college votes, just like, it's also absolutely beyond me.
Even by the end of the episode, the new president has not been, like, sworn in. It is just a case has been made that preemptively this person has the most votes, and there's a process after that.
And that's a very American thing as well. What the episode was about was really the power and the blurred lines between media and government and corporate America and the government.
Yeah.
And I don't, despite the fact that, you know, Murdoch in the UK, et cetera, it's fairly blurred. It's at least on election night, I don't think we have the same kind of brouhaha around calling the election. It's not a thing. Because it's kind of like, we just wait for votes to be counted. We're a smaller country. It's a very simple, it's a kind of simpler system. The way that they judge who's won is slightly complex, but at least it's down to how many people in the country have voted. Whereas in America, it really isn't even like that.
I think the scale of it is just mind blowing.
So what I got from this was more about, it wasn't about who America had voted. It showed you the mighty weight of something like your Fox News or something like your CNN, and the conscience, you know, the conscience that you must have on a night like that, because there were moments, you know, and there were plenty of amazing moments in it, where that responsibility did weigh heavy on almost everybody in the room, except Roman,
Yeah. It's funny how the episode is called America Decides, and the lesson that we learned was that America is powerless to choose, and that the decisions are not even made by political masterminds. They're made by people that have done a bump of coke because they haven't got any caffeine, someone who's got wasabi in his eye from a bodega sushi box. Everyone is running around like a headless chicken, and even the self-appointed kingmakers, which were Roman, Kendall, Shiv, kind of Tom. Each of those were going, well, I'm not going to say it, but I know what I would say. And there was this kind of weird echo chamber when they would all talk a good game about, let's call it. And then it was like, it just felt a bit like Macbeth, where they don't want to say the name of Macbeth. It was just really interesting. But also, as you said, I mean, it's horrifying power of the media, even if it's not a direct parallel to Fox. It's really clear that that's the inspiration behind this kind of thing.
Oh, 100%.
And it's just, I think, you know, the thing that it lacked for me is like, it was just bleak without any counterweight, which is what Succession always does so well. It's sort of bleakly funny. And I think this is the most serious episode, and I think it's the most depressing episode.
Yeah, there weren't many laughs at all.
Nothing really. And the jokes, I actually didn't really think the jokes were even funny because the situation was so grave.
Where were the jokes?
Well, like when Greg tried to put the lemon lacroix in.
Oh, it's a little bit lemon. Yeah.
A little bit lemon. You know, it was this kind of like fast stuff. But I kind of think, I was thinking a lot with this episode that, you know, they've kind of cut the show short, I suppose. Like, I think HBO would have loved it to have done 5, 6, 7 seasons, and they made a decision to stop after 4.
Yeah.
I think you can see why they couldn't do Succession much longer, because it's hard to break away from like the usual like pattern without it just feeling really depressing. And I kind of wondered watching this, Jesse Armstrong obviously involved in some of the best political writing with like The Thick of It, and
he wrote this episode as well, didn't he? Yeah.
But it's clear that he wanted to do an election in this universe, but I think you could also see a case where he was like, what does it look like if it's, there's no joke? What does it look like if this is okay, face the music, this is horrifying.
It's
an interesting exercise in what this show can look like if it mutates into something. But you know, it's just a really odd tone, and I found it just bleak and horrifying, but also kind of, I was a bit frustrated that the show is about to finish and it's actually suggesting all of this without actually getting its hands that dirty. You know, all the stuff we heard about the fires and the attacks, it's all like whispered, you know, we don't see any of it. So it's a funny one to sort of contend with, I think.
I think it was left purposefully ambiguous.
Yeah.
And slightly woolly. Like I was watching it and what fire they mentioned with all these places, Michigan, Kentucky, it's like all these kind of states being bandied around. And then I think it was purposely meant to be slightly confusing because that's genuinely how it must be in those situations.
I get
what you mean about the, I listened to the official podcast first thing in the morning as well. And Jesse Armstrong was on that. And he kind of said that it was the election. He wanted to end Succession on an election.
Right.
So Logan's death, they reverse engineered Logan's death.
Yeah.
Because of this. Because I think, and it makes sense when you think about it, because the one person that was really missed in this episode more than ever was Logan. Mm. It was like, it was kind of obvious that no one in there is qualified to be doing the job that they're doing currently. It was tonight. Logan would have sorted all this out without even blinking. You know, I think the kids alluded to it, didn't they? He's ended wars. You know, start a war by a fax or something, or ended an election by a fax in Canada or something like that was kind of insinuated.
A lot of the war stories came out, didn't they, about this trailblazer. Also, it's worth remembering, Logan was the one who kind of anointed Jared Mencken last season.
Yeah.
You know, he started this and the kids have to finish. And the only one that kind of really backs Mencken is Roman. And it's partly, I think, because he knew Logan, his dad chose him.
Mm.
But there was something, you know, there's something quite powerful about this terrifying male figure. Like, he's been ruled by his dad for so long that he is almost sort of ensnared by this like villainous like boogeyman. And we haven't seen this guy that much at all. I haven't heard him speak that much. And I thought that was another thing that they did by design, was that you didn't see him. And when he was talking at the end of the episode, when he does his like victory speech, I found it quite jarring because I was like, oh God, I actually forgot what he sounded like. Or I forgot how his face went when he smiled. And it was a bit like when Trump won. And you're
just
like,
remind me, was he the guy that Shiv and Logan fell out about when they wanted the photo taken in the lobby of the
But
no, you're absolutely right. I the end of the show felt to me exactly how I felt watching the news reports when Trump won. I was like, God, this is just fucking sad. It's like,
really but I think no one
wants this, you know. It's like,
the funny thing also is, though, I mean, there was no, you know, I heard loads of good things about this episode this morning. There was no way the other guy was going to win. We knew this was going to happen. And yet the reality is still quite horrifying.
Yeah.
But I think you said something just a second ago, which was like, we're deliberately not seeing things. We're in this sort of weird neutral zone where news is coming thick and fast and we don't know what's going on and what's taking precedent. And that was clearly sort of by design, because the whole thing took place in these crowded rooms and lots of things. I thought it was really interesting. Definitely. I think the kids had some of the most frank conversations they've ever had.
Yeah.
And I think you could tell for all of them, the stress was just a breaking point.
Well, they've been skirting around each other with their own agendas. Or actually, that's not really fair. Roman's never had his own agenda. You know, to be fair to Roman, he came across pretty awful in this episode, but he's the only one that's stayed on the path that they all agreed.
Yeah. And he's the one that's the closest to Logan, which is, we have to make a decision on what is good for the company. That is the only, that's why we're here.
Yeah.
We're not political activists. We're not political campaigners. We're not politicians.
Yeah.
And I think his commitment is so devout, and he is kind of like flying a plane into a building in this episode. He's so like, it's just charging around, isn't he? Like, it's quite odd, but it does feel like he'd been sort of radicalized by this sort of enchanting demon that is running.
And one thing, and sorry to hark back to the other podcast again, one thing that Jesse did point out was that, you know, they use these big conversations about the country, but really they're just griping at each other. And like, you know, it's like, oh, can dad shift spilt chocolate milk in the Range Rover? Or in this episode, it was, in this episode, it was
chicken and steak,
chicken steak, whenever I wanted roast, you know, blah, blah, blah. But we always ended up having roast chicken. And Kenner was like, what the fuck are you talking about? You know, it's, and you can kind of see they're so detached from the, from all of that. But Shiv is the only one that really sees the consequences because she's been on the other side, or at, I guess at least has some empathy. The other two don't really seem to have any empathy, although Ken, it only really kind of threw up a dilemma for Kendall when, you know, his daughter got pushed by, I guess, like some Jan the Sixth kind of lunatic in the streets or something like that.
It's interesting how, though, it's interesting how late he's realized the impact of his decisions. Like, he's only now going, and he's only just told Roman in this episode. He said Sophie got like shoved, and he's even then,
he only
he's
found
like,
out yesterday.
Yeah, but still, you know, it's like it's only just getting becoming clear to him that there are implications, and also he's not been worried about all the people that aren't his daughter that are getting shoved.
It's, yeah, exactly.
This, oh, I didn't think the face-eating leopard party would eat my face.
Exactly,
which is that very common thing people tweet when you know, they voted Tories and then the Tories do something. Anyway, so yeah, but there's something that I think you touched on also was just that sort of sense of a father. I thought there was something interesting about this episode with Kendall and his children. And he talks to Shiv about being a good father. And he said maybe the poison just drips down.
Yeah.
I think a lot of this and a lot of his resistance was I might be condemning my daughter to like a really difficult life. And trying to, he's sandwiched between his daughter and his father. And he's trying to act in honor in a way that can honor both of them. But you, what they want are diametrically opposed. And I thought there was a lot of that. And I, what I'd really like, we haven't talked about the end that much, but I think Kendall being a good dad would be a really lovely way to end this show, which is That's coming true. Home early, picking his kids up, just being there for them. Because, you know, even when he's telling his daughter, like, don't worry about the car, sweetheart. I sent it to protect you. They're like, we're terrified.
We're terrified. There's a fucking, there's a man with a gun in a car.
A blacked out car trailing us.
I didn't know which side he was on. Yeah,
but exactly. wouldn't you think he'd tell them, I'm going to send protection?
And yeah, instead, but I just think you think about, and this is one thing I wanted to talk about, was how fluid time is in this season, and how this one day an episode thing isn't really working for me as well as I think it did at the start of the season. Because you have moments like this where it's just like, well, you just fucking tell him, or you do this or you do that. But then you think, right, okay, I'm Kendall Roy.
Yeah.
I've, in the past 4 days, my dad's died. I've flown to the fucking Sweden or Norway or wherever it was, had a massive like row with a dude on top of a mountain. Found, you know, on the plane on the way back, this happened. Then the next day there was a wake, which like it all went to shit, and found that piece of paper with like all this. This was like the next day. Then the next day after that was the tailgate party, and the next day after that was the presidential election,
and the day after that, the funeral,
and the day after that's a funeral.
Yeah,
and so it's kind of like I would forget my own name if all of this was happening to me.
Yeah,
I think so. And something like that car thing, he would have literally, Kendall, his character is always like, oh, let's do this, great, let's blah 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 blah, move on, to walked out of the room into a different meeting. Someone would have heard that going, why can't I fucking protect my kids? We need someone to protect my children. And someone would have gone, that was an order, right? Okay, I'm gonna, okay, Tony, can you stop following them around? That's I can see how that kind of shit happens.
Yeah, yeah. You know? The one day per episode is as you say, I think it's been a really interesting idea. I like it in principle. I think it was novel for 4 episodes. I think now I'm like, well, it's not a bombshell as much when Shiv mentions that she's pregnant because she only found out 4 days ago.
Yeah.
The way of withholding it from Tom hasn't really been realized because maybe that's normal when you've been out 4 days after you I don't know. But
I think it's more to do with the fact that the believability of it all is a tough one, because it pulls me out of the story a little bit.
And also, who has arranged that? Is it Marsha just done all the funeral in the last 4 days?
I think she arranged. And that's what I mean. There's like it's quite an easy thing. Let's just like Marsha can just be in the background doing it, and we'll put a quick scene where Connor's phoning Kendall up, complaining that Marsha's doing everything, and are we okay? Because that puts that whole thing to bed. And actually, that to me feels like I think it could probably done better, you know. I don't know.
I think you're right.
It seems like a scene to explain away a problem, and that's something that Succession's never really done that much. It's like in this episode, we had to have that call in the. I think the call at the end where he was asking to go and see his kids was purely there. Probably there to reiterate about wanting to be a good dad, but also a mechanic to remind the viewers that next week it's the funeral.
Yes, because that call took place, 6 hours after the one at the start of the episode?
Yeah, it would have been maybe fucking 3 a.m. as well.
And he would know, he would know what time it is. Yeah, I think you're right.
I hate getting into the weeds of stuff like that, because it sounds so pedantic and pithy, but it actually does snap me out of the story.
Yeah,
when I'm watching
I don't think it's pedantic. I think it's a very rare conceit for a show to do, and it's worth just kind of opening up a dialogue about why and to what extent it was successful. I mean,
I just think there were too many events to cram in. I like the one day a thing.
Yeah.
Maybe in
season two, for example, every episode is an event, but to your point, they take place 3 weeks apart, a month apart, four days apart, so it feels more realistic. On the other hand, I suppose if anyone has a big event every day across 10 days, it's rich people, right? They don't have errand days where they, you know, take the bins out. They just are constantly filling their time with crazy stuff just to feel less dead inside. I don't love the political stuff generally, not because I'm stupid, although I am quite stupid when it comes to politics, but even one of the things that I always felt Succession was so good at was highlighting how useless and unnecessary quite a lot of these people are. And here we find out that they have inadvertently made one of the biggest decisions in global politics.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing to pass where you're like, because I kind of find with ATN, Tom's in charge, but like last season, he was head of cruise ships. Season before that, he was involved in the park. I'm like, is there no senior directorship at this company? I mean, if we take it to be Fox, is it literally Rupert Murdoch, his sons, and then like one bureau chief?
Yeah. I mean, look, I've worked in newsrooms.
My brain is breaking.
I mean, the bit that I found most realistic was the bit where the kids were kind of like literally just walking onto the floor and like, that fucking happens.
Yeah.
It might not, you know, they might not walk onto the floor, but you're not telling me that at some point Rupert Murdoch's not texted the presenter while he's on air.
Well, this was the thing about the Dominion lawsuit that Fox recently settled, is that he was, the Trump called Murdoch to be like, you need to come out in support of me.
Yeah.
And that they knew they were like, we can't.
I mean, that was the bit for me that I genuinely thought, yeah, that is bang on. And that structure, that's a family-run business, you know?
Well, this is it. I suppose not every, you know, ITV would not be run like that.
And they do have those layers, but they're layers like Carl and Hugo and Frank.
And they're all, seem to be somewhere else, the C-suite. Is it because they're all the ones that have been fired?
Well, I guess, yeah, they're on the kill list, but also it's 2 days since blah 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 blah. They might have, you know, it's just that's the thing with that I have to kind of keep going, well, it was only yesterday that such and such, maybe they're just busy picking up the pieces from et cetera, et cetera. Whereas like you said, like before, months or weeks had passed in between these events. So everyone had regrouped and everyone needed to be there. So it's, it is a difficult one, but you know, we only saw like a few reaction shots. We did have that line from Hugo where he was kind of like, where he's like, oh, respect the process, count every vote. It's so fucking dull.
And they called the left guy boring as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they're in the business of entertainment.
Show business. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And
this is what a lot of people say about Biden. They're like, oh, he's not much of a charmer, is he? And you're
he's so old, he's so doddery. It's like, I'd rather have him and not a rapist.
Yeah, and also, like, we, you know, not to go too political, but our prime minister is, like, 42 and has got no experience doing anything other than being
a head. Rishi Sunak's far duller than Joe Biden.
Yeah, but I think it's shocking that on the one hand in America you've got, you know, you have to be, they're all a certain age. And then we've got like a really, really young prime minister who's actually not really spent a lot of time working in different government departments. His main job has been, you know, just managing a £1 billion empire. Yeah. But yeah, I tell you who I liked in this episode. I really liked Greg. You know, not always been a character that has a great deal of importance. Mm. And there was a really lovely moment where him and one of the other assistants, Jess.
Yeah, yeah.
He kind of says to her, like, I'm going to deliver the verdict. And they both sort of have this moment together where it's like, wow, well, you could tell them anything. You know, you could tell them anything.
Yeah.
You could, you know. But obviously Tom comes up right behind him to obviously verify what he's saying. But they have this weird realization that they're these very passive, small cogs in this giant machine.
Yeah. Greg said, oh, you know, it's not like if I don't say anything, anything's going to be any different. I'm just passive. I'm literally just...
Yeah, But they both took a break.
I enjoyed that scene as well because it was a real kind of like, the country's going to change forever in 2 minutes' time and it's going to be down to the words that have come out of your mouth.
And right now, we're the ones that know and we're about to tell the people that will announce it, that will declare, you know, it was very quite seismic.
Yeah.
I thought Greg was interesting though, because he, first of all, you know, I've been saying this, like he's goofy, but he's no fool. He went out with Lucas's crew.
Yeah.
He ends up really sort of working his way into that inner circle. He's been dealing information. He's like told them all about some of the comings and goings. He then relays to Tom and later to Kendall about Shiv's involvement with Lucas, which blows up the whole partnership of the kids. Oh. And I think it's so... Shiv also threatens Greg at one point and says, you know, I'm going to pull your insides out of your asshole. Yeah. And he knew even then, because he tried saying, like, what's my silence worth? And she just berates him.
Silence is golden. How golden?
Yeah. And, you know, she's like... just comes up with this really silly like threat, like I'm going to pull your intestines out of your bum or whatever.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You could see when he leaves, he's just kind of like, is that all you've got? Like cartoon threat. Like, because she dismissed him, he just went, all right, fuck you. And I really loved that because I'm like, he's learning and he's actually quite smart.
Yeah, the look that he gave Shiv through the window at the end when he, after Kendall had spoken to him, was just kind of like, what the fuck were you? What was I supposed to do? Fuck you.
Come on then. Come on. Disembowel me. The blow up between the kids was great. I mean, everything is heightened, isn't it? But
it was, I mean, again, Sarah Snook's eye acting. She just has these, you know, when you're a kid and you like cried and cried and cried and cried and your eyes went cryy.
Mm.
She has those great, Cry eyes. And it's again, it's like, how do you act? My arsehole clenched in the same way that I think hers was when Kendall went on the phone. There was just that look, you know, it's almost like the hairline goes back. You're like, oh, the look of kind of like, fuck.
It's like, you know,
when you just get cold and clammy,
your
stomach just drops. She just portrayed that in an absolute heartbeat. It was fucking brilliant to watch.
It was as tense as when Roman sent his dad the dick pic.
Yeah.
But the thing that I love about it is the sort of central tension is she went to call Nate to be like, if you can kill the deal, we'll back you. Mm-hmm. She doesn't do that because she doesn't want the deal killed because she wants to be close to Lucas to get close to some proximity of power when the deal goes through.
Yeah.
So she doesn't want to kill the deal. She kind of, does she like pretend to call him or what?
You heard out. Like the phone, you heard the phone kind of like just going through to like, almost like this in the olden days, we used to call the speaking clock, you know, it's that kind of thing.
Yes. Okay. So she goes and does that and we can see, first of all, we see her in the meeting room talking the talk.
Yeah.
And then it cuts to her side of the glass and it's like, the number you have dialed is currently out of service. And so she says that. Ken is just like, fuck it, I'll call him myself. Because she kind of comes back and says, yeah, he's really into it.
She was bad at lying. That was the thing. She didn't take a breather and go, right, what's my line here? She just walked straight back in and it was like, well, what did he say? Oh, he said, yeah, it sounds promising. And it's like,
yeah.
And Roman quite rightly says, what did he fuck? And then Ken was like, what exactly did he say? And I think that was the moment where she's like, she was like, I can't really remember. It's like, nah.
And she starts stammering away. So Ken calls her, calls him himself. And we just watch each side of the glass and we watch Kendall kind of realizing the number's out of service or the number's turned off or whatever.
What do we think? I think he got through to Nate. I think he just phoned Nate up. I don't think she even phoned Nate up. She just phoned some rando number and he...
That is such a weird thing to do.
Yeah. And he phoned Nate up and was just like... And Nate was obviously like, look, I'm fucking busy. I haven't spoken to Shiv. What deal?
This is a good thing to discuss. I wonder if anyone else had this. I thought because it rang out that he was like on the phone or... airplane mode or whatever, and then Ken did the same thing and got the same response and was like, well, if I can't get through to him, you mustn't have got through to him. But
no,
you're saying that he actually just had the conversation that she pretended she had, realized she was lying out of her ass.
100%.
So, but it's amazing because then, you know, you've got this long boardroom. Ken walks the length of the corridor, so you see him on the other side of the glass, talks to Greg pulls out the fatal blind item that she's in with Lucas. Yeah. And Tom said to him at the start of the episode, you know, information is like a fine wine. Like hold it, use it when necessary. And he plays a blinder.
Smash them in the face with it.
Plays a blinder. So I loved that because,
Kendall had already put the pieces together about Mattis.
Yes.
That was the second. He was just like, you fucker. Yeah. And then he just got Greg to confirm it.
And she just falls apart and she's out. She's booted out.
Oh, she's done. She's toast. Although they still then went on to have the kind of philosophical question about Mencken's call. You know, she was still there and they still talked about it. I think the ground would have swallowed me up had I been like found like that. I'd have just
It's crazy though, because, you know, the brothers unite against her. Roman doesn't realize Ken's got this one kingdom, one crown kind of plan. Mm.
Well, that's, but Shiv does, Shiv knows that now.
And Shiv knows, yeah. I thought the scene with Kendall and Shiv was really good where she's like, you're not a bad dad. You're doing your best.
Well, I thought it was a really beautiful scene. You know, it was like, it was the most honest. I think kids have been to each other. At least Kendall's been to anyone for a long, long time.
I think more than the conversation in the finale last year when he talks about killing the kid, because they just countered that with a joke and they moved on. This was very like,
well, this because this affects them. You know, he was honest enough to say, well, I'm going to tell you this because I want to talk it through. I'm thinking of fucking you over. You know, I don't want to
do the family thing or whatever. He says something like that. They seem to understand where they were coming from. And I think she conceded out of, I don't know, some kind of respect, but also she was like, well, I'm going to fuck you over anyway, so I don't care what company you're running, because I'm going to be with Lucas.
I think she just took that as kind of collateral to use against him, so that she, yeah. because and which we may see next week.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Roman, though, has the ear of the president now. You know, he's really
Hocus
figured
POTUS.
Out. I love that. I'd love that he's still the same, even talking to a president.
Yeah.
He's still, you know, yuck, like doing his goofy little...
What was it? Over the road into the bar or something like that? You and me, we're going to go far across the road and into the bar or something like that. That was a great saying. Yeah.
He is right, though, where he's like, we can have morals on a personal level, but we are immune from anything this man is going to do, like, because it doesn't affect us. And it is obviously gross because his speech was all about cleaning up democracy and cleaning up politics, and there was a lot of like sterilizing language.
Oh, they may as well have said build the wall and
but it's fascinating how quickly Roman has decided this is the man who he's always been drawn to, these sort of toxic alpha males. You know, I'm sure Mencken, what was the thing with Mencken and their dicks? Was something last season there was him and Lucas. Lucas, they pissed on someone's phone. But I'm sure there was something with Mencken where they were at that thing, at that king-making session last season. I don't think it ever is as deep as anything psychosexual, but like I think Roman is just drawn to these sort of slightly freaky monsters.
Yeah, well, he's just, you know, he can't kid a kidder. He sees himself in, you know, the slight deviance, the slight kind of brokenness.
Yeah, deviance is it. Yeah.
Someone mentioned something, and I don't know, I'm just checking to see if it was on a YouTube comment or not, but I thought it was quite interesting. The phrase, well, that wasn't a very nice thing to say. Do you remember when Tom said that to her? She said that to him. It's been said also by one of the other kids already. So there's some like theories going around about what that means. Well, that's not a very nice thing to say, is it? So
I'll
put that out to the listeners as well.
Yes, let us know. Well, I thought we talked about it last week a bit because we were saying that it was like something a child would say.
Yeah.
Where you get raised on this very pouty. Like... Yes, yeah. So something we actually should have talked about at the top of the episode, but now is as good a time as any, is you sent me a great piece last Monday Vanity Fair about Shiv's pregnancy. And the piece was called Why Hasn't Anyone Talked About Shiv's Pregnancy on Succession? Like, why do none of the characters know?
Yeah.
And it was an interview to some of the people that worked on the show. And one of the details that is really striking is that by episode 7, which was last week's episode, they hadn't actually written the scene where Shiv finds out she's pregnant.
Yeah.
So I, you know, ride or die for this show, but I do think it's worth, all season people have said, oh, this is very, very clever the way they've kept this from everyone. But actually,
it wasn't.
They just hadn't written it at this point. They just
hadn't decided she was pregnant.
They hadn't decided, and they've kind of reversed, they put it in, you know, afterwards. And I just think it's an interesting detail about how these shows get made, that yes, it's incredibly rare to eke it out for this long, but it was also kind of not by design. They just hadn't written it at this point.
Well, I wonder if it was put in purely because Sarah Snook was pregnant. And
I honestly kind of wondered that.
And a body, I did, you know, wonder that. Just in case she started showing, it would have made them avoid having to do that thing where all of a sudden actresses are standing behind sofas. And
I also wondered if just after they looked at the dailies from the balcony fight where Tom is like, and I don't think you should have children or you would be a good parent to a child or whatever. I kind of wonder if they looked at all that back and they went, this would be so much better if she was pregnant.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because it is. I mean, it's a horrible thing to say, but her mother said a similar thing to her last season at the wedding.
Yeah, that's right.
She's like, some people shouldn't have children. And you're like, that's horrible. But it you can't hit that nerve again.
Yeah.
It would only be good if you can then take it to the next level, which is, and she's pregnant. But we should talk about the pregnancy reveal in this episode, because Tom finally finds out.
And I thought that was a really interesting exchange. Because Shiv apologized. And Tom was just did not give a fuck. Just not interested in the slightest. She's dead in his eyes, really. It's kind of like he wasn't trying to hide it. He didn't really care what the other brothers thought. I think because he knows he's got the sack. I mean, that's the problem. If you kick a man while he's down, it's like, where's Tom got left to go? He can't really care. His wife hates him. He knows he's going to get fired. And as we saw at the end of the episode, he's the scapegoat for the whole
he's the face.
The whole call. He's the face of ATN. And everyone was calling for his blood by the end of it, for prematurely calling Menken. So, but it was interesting. Why do you think Shiv apologized first? What did you make of it?
I often think that, you know, because this is essentially a workplace drama and they're the only people that have a life together. Like, they're married, they have had a sex life, they're in a relationship. So I'm often really interested in what their relationship's like in the office and what it's like when it's not in the office. And I think she has way more status than him. This is her inherited kingdom, potentially. And I kind of wondered if she pities him because he's coked out, exhausted. I mean, flapping around like crazy.
Yeah.
And I kind of wondered if it's a peace thing, but because I think she is kind of the least spiteful of the kids. Like, I feel like she...
I don't find Kendall very spiteful.
No, but then I think he's you know,
he's nuts. With his,
I don't know. He got rid of Volta. I suppose he got rid of Volta because his dad told him to, but I think... Yeah, why did she concede? I think just because she was like, look, I'm actually not that stressed today.
I love that you call it concede. Is that when you and Rob have a row, do you go, Robert, I am about to concede.
Me and Rob do not row.
Do you take a white glove, slap him around the face with it? Concede this, sir.
Concede is a good...
Concede.
Is that the right context? Is that the right
word? Yeah, it is. Yeah, you concede an argument. Yeah.
Yeah, concede.
Well, concession, concede.
We are both very conflict avoidant. We just talk it out. No one raises their voices.
Wow.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Complete opposite.
Hi, Rob, if you're listening.
Hi, babes.
But no, I think that, she probably feels... I mean, I'm intrigued why she mentioned it, the pregnancy.
Yeah, I think that...
It's not the place.
What's that?
It's not the place, is it? Like,
no, it's not. But also, her kind of shock and indignance at Tom's reaction to the pregnancy. I was quite surprised about it because I kind of see where he's coming from. It's like,
I totally think that if I was in that position, this is the first I'd heard of it, I'd be like, you are making this up.
I mean, I might think it. Maybe I wouldn't say it, I think is the thing.
Yeah. But then he's on only lined his tummy with bodega sushi.
Hang a second. Bodega Coke. Sushi. And hang a second. Can we just... So I'm told that was an extraordinarily tiny amount of cocaine, darling. That was doing nothing.
Wouldn't know.
No, me neither. Yeah, no, it's just it's from what funny, I've seen, you know, in films.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
But I just don't think... I mean, it wasn't. I can see why she would be like, "Oh my god, that's the most hurtful." I didn't think that was. Maybe it says more about me than it does Succession, but I didn't find that to be like that bad. It was like, well, what are you expecting to say?
I think she maybe thought that she had this amazing ace up her sleeve and pulled it out, and it was just a string of handkerchiefs. And it's like, wait, it didn't work. Like, oh, I had this.
All you've got is fucking sausages.
Yeah, it is exactly that. I think she honestly thought she was like, I'm going to tell him I'm pregnant. He's going to realize what awful thing he said to me last night.
Yeah.
And it's going to like ruin him. And then he just goes, don't believe
you. Is that
you.
Even true? Yeah.
Like, I think, I mean, he doesn't realize what a blinder he played because he just robbed her of having any like one-upmanship.
Yeah, true. No, that's a good point. That's a very good point.
But I think, yeah, I mean, after the way that they are, I mean, it's just not the place to tell him. Or maybe he thought that, like, if she was going to tell him, it would be, you know, that's when she'd get real and sincere with him, and she's just never like that with him. But I find them just, I find them fascinating, and I think their constant turbulence, as I didn't realise at first when we watched this show, just how central they were to a lot of this. It's like, They're all the big moments are Tom and Shiv. The wedding in season one, the potential threesome, and the big chat on the island in season two, where he says, "I think the hurt I would have from not being with you would still not be as great as the how sad I am when I'm around you."
Such a great line. Such a
and then
such
last
a
season,
tragic line.
Just tried to send him to jail every week.
No, I mean it has. Yeah, Tom has suffered a lot in this season, more than
he really has. Yeah. I want, but let's talk about this with Tom though. Like you were saying, you know, he kind of is getting the flack for all this now. He's the face of everyone's calling him. You know, it's such a good microcosm for this show because he wants more power, he wants more status, he wants more responsibility. And when you give him the keys, he doesn't know where to fucking put them.
It was a shambles. He spent the whole thing at the beginning kind of prepping himself, going, it's my call. I need a coffee, otherwise atomic war is going to happen. And in the end, he was going, it's not my call. It's up to you guys.
Yeah. Just as soon, but the kids, Roman is kind of clever because he wields a lot of power, but is not seen to be doing so. Tom wields no power and is seen as the person responsible. Yeah. And it's the, you know, I think because he'd sort of grown up with less money and because he's been quite status obsessed, the title and the idea of the power is more enticing. And I think, I just find it fascinating. Like I was thinking today, like, does he think he's doing a good job? Probably. If he got demoted, where does he go? Does he now think, well, I have to be a CEO? Like, it's just fascinating how not good he is, and yet it's always someone else's fault that he's not thriving or succeeding.
Well, you mentioned his career trajectory, and he's been parachuted into all the roles there because it's something that the family need to control the narrative over, whether it's the cruises, whether it's theme parks. With what was the creepy guy? What was his name? What did they all call him?
Oh, Mo. His
funeral.
Mo Lester. And Willa didn't know that it was a nickname.
So all of these things, they've parachuted him in because of his relationship with Shiv, and they know that he's just desperate to ascend.
Mm.
All his roles, he's only been there to be a mouthpiece for the family and to do their bidding and to cover up corporate
shenanigans. And he's just got no sense of judgment. You know, when this voting thing is set on fire, he goes, well, just because there's a fire doesn't mean it's news. But it's like your job is to decide whether it is or not.
He did that great thing that all bad bosses do, which is like, member of the team came in at one point quite early on, and so whoever the woman I thought was Sid.
There's another woman. I didn't know who that was.
The kind of editor in chief or whatever her role was, exec producer or something, kind of walked in and said, "We've got this going on. What do you want to do about this, this, this?" And he was just like, "I trust you." What that actually means, if anyone ever says that to you, if any boss ever says that to you, it means they cannot be asked to make that decision.
I don't even want to think about making that decision.
But lo and behold, if you make the wrong one, you're in trouble. Yeah. So he tried to delegate, couldn't even do that properly. And there was the hyper focus on, which is exactly what happens in newsrooms on those kind of things. I was working in Sky News on the night the Kosovo war began.
Oh my God.
It was pandemonium. And that the touchscreen kind of like fiasco was exactly what happens. Something will break. All of a sudden, like the bat phone will ring. And it's like Logan sat there watching at night. It's that kind of thing. Look at his head. He's got.
But they're sort of. They're all as stressed as if Logan is watching. And the fact is, it's like he's gone.
It's what would Dad do? Who knows? And it was mentioned. Who knows? He's not here. He's dead.
Somebody said something online. I can't remember who it was, or I would have given them credit for it. But it was just something I saw this morning that it was kind of like they're all. It's all as if their God has died. Some of them get really devout. Some of them are like trying to think like him. Roman has just gone like nihilistic. Like there's no point in any of this.
Yeah,
because God's dead. Or never existed or whatever. I thought it was really clever but there is, Logan still feels integral to this show because it's like they're all acting as if he's able to judge them rightly or wrongly, like that stern, disapproving glare, and it's like, he's gone, he's dead.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Honourable mention, please, to the demise of Conor Roy's presidential campaign. It did have, which resulted in the one laugh out loud moment for me, which was during Connor's concession piece. It cut back to Carl, who went, "Connor was running for president," really funny.
They're so mean. So he is going to, where is he going? Slovenia.
He kind of got what he wanted, didn't he? Yeah.
Willa's thing was like, "Oh, we can go to Geneva for lunch and we can go here for dinner." And she's thinking of all the ways she can leave. Also, Willa was looking, I thought, very first lady in her sort of red dress.
I found it just sad when Kentucky went for Mencken, you know, like seconds after they've said, "There's still hope. Schrodinger's cat.
I know. I loved that because we were talking about that on the podcast. I think it was when I was talking about The Sopranos, but it's that, for people who don't know, it's that idea that if you put in a cat in a box, and I can't remember this whole thing, but the idea is until you look in, it's either dead or alive.
Yeah,
and until you know, it's both.
It's both dead or alive. Yeah.
And so Connor
his phrase was like, "As things currently stand, Connor, I am as much a president as Mencken."
We are all president.
Sadly, 5 seconds later. But I just thought it was sad because Willa didn't know what she was just like, oh. And she was like, "Fuck Kentucky. Willa. No Willa. Oh, no. Alas, Kentucky."
Yeah, he got very like, I thought it was very like Hamlet.
Well, it's because of that dickhead that he's had like, "Oh, my liege." the fucking guy with the mutton, the kind of moustache. His awful chief of staff.
I like though that Connor did matter, not in a good way, but he did concede to help, you know, it was all part of the...
Yeah, to his credit.
He mattered in the end.
And he came up with an idea that neither Mencken nor Roman had thought of. He was just like, "Well, you've lost your 1%. It's too late now." That was Saturday's conversation. Mm-hmm. And then Connor was like, "Well, how about if I concede towards him?" Which isn't a thing. You know, it's like...
Right. I didn't really understand what he was proposing, but you're saying it's just the theatrics. So
he proposed that basically he could give airtime to the idea that Mencken was the best candidate while the polls were still open, or at least while to encourage ATN to call, you know,
So right, I see, I see. That makes sense. That's kind of what I thought, but I didn't quite appreciate that it was his idea and that it's not a thing that people do.
Well, no, it's not. They just concede. And I think if it's early on, like if it's months before, then, you know, someone concedes and say, I'm now backing Hillary Clinton or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But that's in the nominations process.
Yes.
Question, who was the actor who was the who got wasabi in his eyes? The British actor. He's been
Elliot,
in some...
Oh my God, what's he called? He was in Breaking Bad.
Was he in Breaking Bad? I thought he was like...
He was Elliot Schwartz in Breaking Bad. The actor is called...
Oh, yes.
Adam Godley. And he... So in Breaking Bad, he was Elliot...
He was the old partner of Walt.
The old
White,
business
wasn't
partner it? That yes, ended up marrying Walt's like...
Is he not British though? I thought I watched it and I thought he was
He is British. Yeah, he is British.
I thought he was Harry Potter's dad or something like that. Has he been in Harry? Was he in any of the Harry Potters? Or,
I don't think I know.
He's got
the
a
guy
very
mean,
Harry Potter-esque kind of face.
He was in. Oh my God, he's been in loads.
He's been in loads. Quantum of Solace.
He's one of those guys that when he. Oh my God, he was. Oh my God, he was the music teacher in Love Actually.
He was also. I think he was. Charlie Bucket's dad in
the movie.
Charlie and Chocolate Factory. He was in.
He's been in. He was in Mad Men for one episode. Wow. Don't remember that. I don't remember which one. But
he's had a good career.
Suits, Homeland.
He's had a good
Umbrella
steady,
Academy.
He's probably richer than a lot of A-listers.
Do you know, he's one of those guys that when he, it's a bit like, oh my God, there's so many actors like him who like I literally could not tell you their name, but you know when they pop up and you're like. Oh, this is going to be a good episode.
Yeah.
There's the guy, I literally can't remember his name, but he was, he'd guest starred in Frasier and he was Hannah on Girls' therapist. And he's just one of those old school like actors where you're like, I just love seeing a good actor getting work. But he was brilliant. I loved him in this. And as the sort of sane voice in the room. And I just thought that it was not lost on me that his name was Darwin. You know, origin of the species, it's like there's something so like humanity is at stake.
Yeah.
Darwin is the one with logic, reasoning, science, maths. And then you've got all these crazy people being like.
Yeah. Yeah. Those character actors are just amazing, though. There's one called Bill Camp.
Okay.
Who, whenever you see Bill Camp. And whenever you see him appear on screen, you go.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Okay. This is going to be a good.
He was in the Queen's Gambit.
Ah, yes, he was, yeah.
But he has just such a good actor face.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I think, just free idea for anyone, a podcast called Character Actor, and you just interview all of these people that, you know, they just do probably do like 25 bit parts a year. And it'll, I might pitch that.
Good idea. Bring that to Daft Doris.
Any other...
AOB?
AOB?
Any other business?
Any other business, great, yeah. Well, Lucas wasn't in it a great deal, wasn't doing anything particularly interesting. But
nice silk pyjama bottoms. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that'll be on Succession Fashion anytime soon.
I put that on my Instagram after we talked about it last week. And now, I'm just saying, a lot of people follow it.
Ah... Good for you.
I sometimes do this. I sort of look and I see, like 19 of my friends are now following them, and then like, would I like some credit for that, please?
Yeah, exactly. Give me the clout.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. No, he played it quite low key, apart from expressing outrage, like "What the fuck?"
Yeah, it wasn't a vintage Lucas episode. No. I did. Can I tell you a little conspiracy corner over here?
Please do. Love a conspiracy.
There's a very popular theory doing the rounds that last episode, Lucas and Ebba were like, oh no, the numbers in India are fucked.
Yeah.
And there's a rumor that they are like playing the Roys.
That's a double bluff.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yes.
That's kind of that would be kind of interesting, right? That they
that
just
would
go.
Be interesting because, and also, you know, the fact that what other reason would he mentioned to Shiv about not wanting the numbers to come out, because Shiv was like picking day after the election as a day to bury bad news and to kind of get it out there, and mm-hmm. she was writing the press release and all of that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. And he was like, yeah, maybe I was kind of talking to Oscar and Ebba and Gregory about maybe not releasing my funky numbers. Why would he not? Because that's something that just will come out.
Yeah. It's interesting because I think I just don't know if they're so preoccupied with everything else.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're really getting in front of this. I mean, I don't know. I also don't know if we'll get a lot of that next episode because it's the funeral next episode.
Yeah, but it's the funeral. Funerals are what, an hour long? Half hour long? I don't, you know, there's not going to be, it's not going to be like an EastEnders funeral. There's not going to be fights in the church, I don't think. You know, I think.
Well, yeah. It's an interesting proposition. I mean, of course they were going to do a funeral. We know Roman's going to do a speech. It was mentioned in the last episode. But yeah, it's just kind of clear that we're like really close to the end. And I think I'm just kind of like, oh, there's so much more. They still haven't got this fucking deal sorted.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think it's going to blow up.
Yeah. Oh no, 100%. I can't see. I'm kind of crossing my fingers that it's a satisfying ending. I have faith in Jesse Armstrong and the writers and Lucy Prebble, and in that they understand what it's like for a viewer watching these kind of shows.
Yeah.
And then they aren't afraid. They're not intellectually above. They don't think of themselves as intellectually superior and wanting to educate us and teach us a lesson about ourselves, blah, 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 blah. They know that we do like a drama and a cliffhanger and an explosive this and explosive that, because that's why we get Roman with the dick pic. That's why we get Connor at the other side of the glass with the phone. They understand the dramatic climaxes that I think they want.
I can't place my finger on what kind of tone it's going to be, though. I just don't think we've been with these people long enough for it to be too... You know, like when Mad Men ended.
Too navel-gazing.
When Mad Men ended, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm never going to see Peggy again.
Yeah.
But when this ends, I'm not going to be like, oh my God, I'm going to miss Roman so much. And so I think I'm kind of intrigued about.
And I think they'll leave a lot still, just like it's another day at the office kind of thing.
Another day, yeah.
Because we're just stepping out of the story. And I think they quite like the idea of, yeah, we're just dipping in for the story. They're carrying on. You know. Which is why the deals and stuff might not get resolved. And it's just, you know.
I do think also, like, I think a lot of this episode, I mean, yes, it was about the election, but they used the extremity of the election to explore the characters. And that's what we were saying about having these really human conversations. I think I want to just loop back and say, like, I think I want it to end with Kendall kind of breaking the cycle, mm-hmm. being a good dad. I think that would be really nice. I think that would be really sweet without being like too clever.
Yeah.
And it would make the absence of the kids over the last couple of years make more sense. I've forgotten what his son looks like. Is he called Ivor Moore or something?
I can't remember. And let's not forget Ivan. That in the first episode, Roman was with a kid.
How did he get someone pregnant when he's so averse to sex? And
first and last time that child's ever been mentioned.
I wonder what the gap was between filming the pilot and...
It's probably a few months.
Yeah, they do take a while, don't they?
Well, Logan famously wasn't Scottish in the pilot.
Yeah, Brian Cox is apparently furious about that. Because that was his idea and they said no. Have you heard this on the... Was it on the official podcast?
Yeah.
He was like... And then they came up to me in season two and said, are we Scottish now?
Carl mentioned it to him at a read-through. He's like, oh, did you hear you're Scottish now? What? Oh, dear. Funny. I've enjoyed that. God, it's like therapy for me. It really is. I know it's a bit of a podcast cliche to say, but...
Aww. I love talking about it.
I do love getting it off my chest and kind of like working it out as we go.
Yeah, but then what happens is when Rob gets home, we watch it again. And I'm like, I like because I've already watched it, I'm kind of watching him watching it being like, and he's just kind of like, and then I'll go, what do you think the significance of that was? Well, I'll tell you. And then I go into my whole fucking, you know, I've spent all day thinking about it, and he's just like, okay, back off.
Yeah.
So we'll be watching it again tonight.
Enjoy.
Which would be good. Enjoy. I think I'm intrigued to watch it again.
Yeah, I've watched it twice. I enjoyed it the second time.
But it's generally really good on a second watch, I would say.
Mm. Well, it's because it's a bit like The West Wing. You spend so long trying to work out, it's like, oh my God, there's so many words, so many words being said. And you kind of start, you miss a joke and yeah. But thanks everybody for being patient with The House of the Dragon. Mm. My fault, with Game of Thrones. Completely my fault. Life is... I've been pretty crazy the past week, and
we've both had quite crazy weeks though, haven't we?
And I just ran out of time, and a bit of honest talk, wasn't really in the mood for it, if I'm just being perfectly honest. I had a lot of stuff to sort out, and it just wouldn't have been a good episode, so I didn't
know. But you know what? You can't pour from an empty cup.
So we will aim to do. We're going to try and do that this week.
We should do that this week. Yeah, we should. I've watched the first two episodes.
I've got reams of notes from these 2 hour long episodes.
Doing two at a time takes longer in terms of prep, but fucking great. Like, I'm so excited to talk about it with you.
Yeah. Likewise.
I've got loads of thoughts.
Likewise.
And, yeah. So thanks to everyone for being patient. And we just needed a bit of a recalibration going on.
Before we come around to doing the Thrones one, Bruce, if you're listening, Man of Bronze, I'm so sorry. Like 2 weeks ago, you did a drawing. We've had our first fan art.
Oh my God, I know. This was amazing.
So did we retweet? Oh my God, I didn't even retweet it. I'm retweeting it right now. So Man of Bronze, thank you very much. It's on our Twitter at dragoncast_pod. Our first ever fan art. And I have to say, I look fucking great.
I've never been drawn before.
Haven't you?
In that way. I've had a caricature in France once.
We both look quite European.
Yeah. I thought we looked like we'd have been at Eurovision.
Yeah, you do look like you've been in. Yeah, I'm wearing a coat of armor, and you're wearing like a Littlefinger type cloak kind of thing. Very nice with a stiff collar.
Yeah, I do favor a stiff collar. Oi, oi.
We will get onto it. So don't despair. And we have been kind of working out the future of Dragoncast in between, blah, 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 mm-hmm. which we'll share with you as well. And we're still planning on live streaming the final episode. The final two episodes of Game of Thrones as well. But until next week, which will be the funeral, I've got to go because there's a goose trying to shit a house brick. Just outside the door.
This is the Sound of Succession podcast with Jamie East and Chris Mandel. It's part of the Dragon Cast series where we talk about the best TV shows in the world. HBO, please don't sue us.
You know what to do, like and subscribe. Ah, fuck off.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.